Mr. Clarkson, reel 31.
In the other, the newest mess that they had in the barracks, the 114 mess, it was just like a doss house upstairs. It was all beds all pushed together there. There must have been a couple of hundred in the mess. They had bad beer that they sold down there, naffy beer, and it was most uncomfortable. There was nothing comfortable about it. Now, I did mention the other day about a fellow who got detention, a petty officer. He was a remarkable man. He was on the Iron Duke when I was there. He was a great organiser. He was a favourite with the officers, and he was a favourite with the lower deck. Tom Merrifield, he was a wonderful man. Well, before he left the Iron Duke to come home, he said, "I'm going to be the president of the petty officers' mess in barracks when I get home." He left before we did. And when Tom said he was going to do anything, he'd done it. And he said, "That one's shaken up there," he said, "it's a proper slump." And Tom Merrifield came home, he was elected president of the mess, and when we came home, we couldn't believe it was like a palace, a holiday camp. He used to get there, one weekend he would have all the cast from the Hippodrome in to entertain them, but they used to entertain us on a Sunday night. The next week, it would be the... not the Hippodrome, the theatre there.
Yes.
He used to have the Portsmouth football team in. Once a week, he used to have dances, whist drives. He had everything. And this 114 mess became known throughout Portsmouth as a great place of entertainment. Talk about Butlins. It was really good.
And one man could make that much difference.
One man, yes. He was a remarkable man, mind you. He was a boozer. When he was on the Iron Duke, he was a fella like... we found out he wasn't single. He was supposed to be single then. And when we were at Constantinople, he was always up in the Atlantic Club or somewhere like that. He always had a couple of females with him. And when we used to come down to catch the boat back to the ship at night, at 11 o'clock, the commander would be there, Trunky Fitzherbert, and he would get in the boat and say to the coxswain, "Petty Officer Merrifield aboard yet?" And if Petty Officer Merrifield wasn't in the boat, he used to wait for him. And down would come Tom in a taxi, "Cheerio, my love," and be kissing these girls, and off he'd go. Now, everything that was on that ship, any good, Tom Merrifield organised it. In the Navy, they've usually got a chummy ship, but otherwise, ships, they're not so very friendly to each other. Now, he organised an affair with the Benbow, that was our chummy ship, invited all the POs, there's about 60 of them, the Benbow, aboard the tea, and he had a slap-up-do there. He collected some money, but he must have put a lot of his own in there. And we had the mess was all decorated. One or two came up and said, "Oh, why should we have to pay for this? Why should we? I want my tea now, and I'm not going to wait for all of it." One or two, but all the others conformed to it. And he had all this lot aboard the tea. Took him ashore in the evening. He hired a pub and had everybody there. I always remember that this first time. Everybody had to sing at least two lines of a song. I always remember mine, "When She Wore a Tulip." That was it. And then we went to Constantinople, and he had a great big cup he'd got from somewhere, and we played the POs of the Benbow at the stadium. He ordered refreshment. That was two great big cartloads of beer, ice beer, and every now and then A player would nip off the field and swallow a couple of pints of that and back again. I've got a photograph of that somewhere. But when the captain, we had a popular captain at the ship, Tom had the barge, you know, the big barge, pulling barge. He had that decorated with fairy lights, and that night when the captain went home on a P&O boat, as he went through the breakwater, there was the this barge, all decorated, a jazz band in it, and playing the captain out. That's all. He was a marvellous man.
Did he actually manage to stay in barracks then? Someone like that?
Because that was, the president of the mess was a 3-year job. And what his downfall was, while we were there, or towards the end of his time, there was another petty officer who we'd had on the Iron Duke who deserted and went off. He came back again, he got caught, done his time, and eventually, over the years, he got made a PO again. And he came into barracks and he said, he was a villain, and he said he was going to get on the committee of this mess. And Tom said, while I'm president of the mess, you're on no committees at all. You don't have anything to do with it, he said. And so eventually this fellow, to get his own back, said he thought Tom must be spending a lot more money than he's getting. And so he went to the officer of the block and said he'd like to have the books examined. They examined them and they found out that over a period of 3 months, Tom had appropriated the sum of £127. It was all paid back, it was all there, because he borrowed the money off a friend of mine who joined the ship with him. People would give him anything, help him. And so they had a court of inquiry, and he was court-martialed, got 9 months' detention and disrated to a naval seaman. And that didn't kill him. He came up again after that. And he got the George Cross during the war, the George Medal on it. But I met him. I was on the Benevolent Trust, and I was out on a job one night, going along the South Sea front, and I'd been out on this, it was help somebody, and all of a sudden a car pulled up alongside of me, and out jumped Tom Merrifield. He was a pensioner then. Oh, he said, I've been looking all over the place for someone. He said, I've been down here 3 days now looking for an old ship, he said. And to get off that bike, he said, he came, he took my wife and I down to Brighton, and he had a captain of the Black Watch with him. And he was on a 14-day touring holiday, and they'd left his wife and the captain of the Black Watch's wife to look after the pub all the way. And talking to the captain of the Black Watch, I said, how did you come to know Tom then? He said, well, this was up in somewhere up the North Country. Just forget the name of the place. And he said, somebody said, you want to come out of this pub, the Three Feathers, outside this Darlington, that was it, outside Darlington. He said, it's wonderful. He said, there's a ex-Matlow, he said, taking it over. He's had a big hall built at the back. He's got a jazz band going there. And there's meals and everything. All the barrels are decorated with sailors and funny hats and all that stuff. There's Tom, he organised anything like that he could.
And to that extent, I mean, things like barrack life, and like shipboard life for that matter, could pivot around what people could do for themselves very much.
Yes, if you've got a fellow like that, he was outstanding. But, as I say, at the time we had a good captain, and Merrifield, he got away with a lot. But he was always a jovial, happy-go-lucky sort of a fellow. He could sit down and spin a yarn for a tot. He could tell a long story. Everybody used to listen to Tom.
He was a yarn, though, was he? Would people sit around in the mess of an evening or whatever?
Yes, he'd draw everybody with. And then this fellow that I joined the ship with, he was a photographer. And he started a business on the ship, and it was before the NAFI, ever took over. And then eventually he started an ice cream business. Wherever we went, this fellow, he used to, Clements, he used to have ice ordered to be brought alongside. He had all the lockers in the ship, wash deck lockers, decorated with the various curtains. And Tom, he pointed him as his ice cream man. And then later on as a bookie, they run a book. But that was... I say, Tom, he created some entertainment for a ship that otherwise would have probably been dead.
Yes. And similarly in the barracks ashore, he made life in the barracks.
He turned that place upside down, yes, he
did. Did that make it more attractive for everybody?
Oh, yes.
Everybody who was
there. It was a happier atmosphere. People didn't want to go ashore at night, stopping the mess.
It made that much difference, in fact. The
PO. Oh, yes.
And one man at the centre of the entertainments, the PO committee, could actually really make such a difference to the life of the naval barracks. Gosh.
It always does. If you just take the, any mess where they're all a bit morbid, and if you've got one man like that who's also helped. I mean, the officers backed him, as well the commander and everybody. He was such a favourite that...
Apart from that sort of thing, I mean, if you were in barracks, say, at Portsmouth, you couldn't do very much in the barracks unless someone was organising it, such as that. And it meant that you... What would you do in the evenings, for instance, if there wasn't...
Go and sit down... And I tried it, sitting down in the mess and having a pint of beer, and absolutely dead. Because anybody that was married, of course, and that could get ashore, was ashore. And people were continually passing through there. So really, I mean, it's not like being in a ship where you've got a friend, a chum, and you're there all the time. There are people there probably you hadn't seen before. And it was a most miserable existence. And nobody seemed to want to create a happier atmosphere. They were there on sufferance.
And also you were part of, you being processed through it. Was there a kind of a regular staff, if you like to call them that, and the men being processed through? How, you know, we talked earlier about how some men managed to get cushy billets. Now let's say that you're in the barracks and... You know, you have an access to that sort of job. How do you get a job like that? How do you work it?
Well, I suppose
your ticket for a job like that.
It's a fact that one gets a friend of his in there, and he gets his friend. That seems to me to be the way it's worked, and it's sort of jealously guarded. They don't won't tell anybody else how they got it or anything like that. It's something that they've got and they're going to hang on to, and they're not going to give anybody else the easy way into it.
And were the different or was barrack life much the same in Portsmouth, Chatham, Devonport? I mean, had you experience of others than Portsmouth?
Well, no, I haven't
really.
Actually.
Yeah.
I've never been to Chatham. I've been in Devonport, but for a very short stay in and out. And the only time I ever spent in Devonport was when I came home from the Red Sea. They didn't want us. They didn't want to know us. Duffos, they call them, the West Country men. And so they put us on the parade. Good job it was a day like this. Put us on a parade with all our luggage, and we stayed there all day, and the luggage stayed there all night. We were allowed ashore that night. They didn't want us. Get us in and out.
They controlled the barracks, in fact, in that way. I mean,
oh yes,
the people who were there permanently, almost, really ran the place.
Well, they used to say of the West Country people, "We ain't got enough of our own chaps."
Was there that difference? I mean, did you notice that difference quite distinctly about the West Country and, say, Portsmouth?
Oh, yes. It was happy and chatty. That was Chatham. And they didn't... they didn't sort of mix in at all. The Chatham, the Portsmouth and the Duffos, they always used to say, of the Devonport people, put a little bit away for the rainy day, for the sun won't always shine. And they're very close. The Teddyogie Wallers, as they call them, very close, and they didn't mix.
Their own crown. They mixed with each other, but not with other
folk. I don't think they ever trusted each other. I'm sure they didn't. And they always used to say, anybody that they didn't like in the Navy, they always used to say they lived too far west.